next on Girlfriend.
And all they're doing is like a little squirrel, a little gerbil going round and round and round on the same subject, coming back to the same conclusion. It's amazing if you start talking back to yourself, talk and say, where'd you come from? It starts answering you. Don't over-identify with the other person's behavior as your value, your worth.
Welcome to Girlfriend, Relationship Radio Rebooted. I'm Jeff Newman for BDGX.com, and with us as usual, Cynthia Chauvin, our relationship expert, also a practitioner of hypnosis, certified practitioner of hypnosis and NLP, John Miles, her partner, and her husband, also a certified practitioner of hypnosis and NLP. And here on Girlfriend, it's Relationship Radio Rebooted. If you're in a relationship, if you have been in a relationship, if you want to be in a relationship, this is the place to listen for some excellent advice, some pointers, and some methods of behavior that can only help you. Today, we're talking about that voice in your head. Should I listen to that little voice in my head? And a little bit later on, the building block for better relationships, don't over-identify. Cynthia, that voice in my head, is it telling me good things? Is it telling me bad things?
You know, sometimes it's supposed to be a good thing. And you hear something like, gee whiz, I'm just too good for this situation. But in actuality, that is not a good voice to listen to. Even the one that comes out that goes, oh, gee whiz, I should be better at such and such. Because both of those come from an experience that you had, that you created a thought process to. It's subconscious thinking. When your thoughts come up, it is your subconscious replay of a previous experience. So we think we have in self-talk, and it is self-talk, but it's not self-communication.
What's the difference?
Self-communication is objective. It's looking at the present situation, using past reference materials to enlighten and enhance your connection to your objectivity, but not taking the present situation and painting it with past emotions.
Could that be another word for thinking?
Yeah, if you're really thinking in the present, you're right. It's true thinking, mm-hmm. Not rehashing, but true thinking. Most people take rehashing and think they're thinking. And all they're doing is like a little squirrel, a little gerbil going round and round and round on the same subject, coming back to the same conclusion because they haven't thought outside of the emotional aspect that keeps them tied to those thoughts.
So these are things that come into your head,
yeah,
when you're reacting to something?
Usually before you react.
Okay.
It's usually the thought or after you've reacted. You know, some people get them before, some people get them after, some people get them before and after.
Or in jail, yeah. 10 months after. They reacted the wrong way. I mean, seriously, yeah. Is this a process that should happen before someone reacts? And is that self-communication? Or better yet, what's the difference between self-talk and self-communication?
Well, self-talk is when you go back over what you did or before you getting there. You know, you build yourself in. Let's start one point before you go in someplace. And you're telling yourself how awkward you feel or how this isn't going to work out. Or it never worked out before, so why should it work out this time? Or, gee whiz, aren't I great? And it always works out for me, and I'm never disappointed. And that sounds good in theory, but people do that to eliminate the new experience or to put it into a box in order to create a limitation of the experience so that they can't really have the experience inform them of anything new.
You know, in a certain way, it's never positive. Self-talk is never positive when put in context.
But it's all natural. We all do it.
Well, it's all our history.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, we all do it, but we're not necessarily stuck to do it. You know, we don't have to do it. We can bring self-talk into self-awareness and then think, like you said. Think instead of self-talk. So if you use the self-talk as, oh, wow, this is something that I have thought before, is it legitimate in this situation? You know, am I being real? Am I being present? Where did it come from? It's amazing if you start talking back to your self-talk and say, where'd you come from? It starts answering you.
Yeah. Yeah, well,
it's there just to answer you. It's like, wow, okay. Yeah. And then that's when you start thinking, you start becoming objective, and you start becoming present.
But that happens to everyone. Are you saying that we should ignore the negative?
You should engage it and find perhaps and enlighten it with more resources. So just as you said, you should start thinking instead of just letting that little gerbil go around in the circle and convince you that you're too magnificent for the presence that you're in. Because I see this a lot, believe it or not, in women, where they'll go out with a man and either he's an inch too short or he makes, you know, $10,000 less a year than what they want. And their self-talk is going on in their head that they're this and they're that, and they've worked so hard and they've created this package and it's worth more than he has to offer. Instead of experiencing the man that's in front of them, they're equating him to as good or bad before they even step up to the plate.
Unless the self-talk is more caution.
You would think that caution would be a good thing, but that's not necessarily so. Thinking's a good thing. Figuring out whether you're in a safe place is a good thing. That's hunky-dunky. But self-talk that would create caution unnecessarily blocks the flow of the experiences in front of you.
Now, let's put this into practical use.
Okay.
I'm going into a situation, and this is going to happen. I'm too good for the situation. Oh, no, you're not. How do I rationalize my thoughts? What is your advice?
Okay.
I can tell you right now, we haven't talked about the gut check.
Well, that's, you know, interesting. John calls it the gut check. Your subconscious mind is your ganglion nerve system behind your stomach. That is the subconscious mind. That's where your information that automatically goes through your system comes from. So that now, do I know this technically or biologically? No. Intuitively, this is what I feel.
But you're not the only person who said this. So there are a lot of people who talk about this.
Well, that's true. That's true. But I don't know if it's scientifically proven or anything else like that.
I think Bruce Lipton is a PhD. Yeah. He talked about this.
Excellent. I didn't read it. Yeah. Well, I thought about it first. I'm just too special.
Self-talk.
Okay. At any rate, whether it be derogatory or positive, when you're in that moment right there, you should take a moment and say, this is interesting. I wonder where this conversation began. Because this is a brand new experience. Mm-hmm. So you might be walking into a situation that's totally, completely different. It may be very easy. It may be very hard. But it's going to be different if you think about it different beforehand.
I'll give you a perfect example. When you get yourself all wound up to have an argument or an intense situation there, and you've literally talked at the mirror, you've talked in the car, and then you arrive in the situation and it's completely different than everything about your self-talk.
Yeah, you started to defend yourself before you got there, and you didn't have to. They never intended to have that conversation with you anyway.
And that self-talk was completely irrelevant at the end of the day. All you did was wind yourself up.
I just feel it would be unnatural to try to talk myself out of the self-talk that's going to happen naturally. Because again, that fine line or the semantic of whether it's thinking or I'm being overprotective of myself. I'm not talking about I'm too good for the room. I'm talking about being cautious, being preparing myself for something. These are things that I think everyone, first day of the job, I'm nervous, I'm apprehensive, you know, I'm going to bungee jump or maybe not. Being cautious are things that maybe it comes from the gut, but you know, you're thinking
probably
about it.
Probably comes from experience.
Well,
being cautious.
Suggestion.
Enthusiasm.
I'm sorry.
Saying when enthusiasm gets doused enough, we become cautious. In our business specifically. Yeah. In the media business, this happens all the time. You come in very enthusiastically and you can get...
Yeah, but you don't have to let anybody take your enthusiasm.
No, sure.
Even if they don't respond. Sure. But that's another conversation. I'll tell you about singing Christmas carols on, you know, to people on the phone.
In July.
To move my energy.
My wife.
My energy. Yeah. But at any rate, getting back to your self-talk situation, this is perfectly okay. But talk to the self-talk. Where'd you begin? Is there really concern here? Do I need to feel concern? Where did this original thought of self-talk come from? Who's doing the talking? What are you? Where are you? What do you look like? Start engaging your self-talk so that the self-talk can become aware that there's something else besides itself available.
It's all me. Here's the answer. It's all me.
Yeah.
It's just my conscience. It's all me. And I'm comparing it to a situation I had. I'm comparing it to something that I don't want to happen again being cautious, or something I want to be better.
Right.
Would you say that that's just healthy thinking?
Well, when you go into the thinking part of it, yes. But I'm talking about the gerbil that goes around that says over and over again, this is going to happen, doom and gloom, I'm too special, so forth and so on. When you're talking about thinking over a situation and bringing into perspective all the current information, mm-hmm. not just your history, but the current information and the current unknown, and start to think, well, okay, now this occurred before. I would like to project my energies into this direction. I'm going to hold true to that energy. I'm going to hold true to that thought. In other words, I'm going to walk in. I'm going to be enthusiastic. And if I meet somebody that's an a-hole, that's their problem.
Should we always be optimistic?
I believe in optimism and realism. I like to be optimistically realistic, meaning that I'm dealing with the present situation, and I'm optimistic about it, but I'm realistic as to what I'm dealing with. In other words, it's not a bubblegum fairy thing, you know.
Realistic about it.
In other words, I know this person has a tendency to be less than charming. Mm-hmm. I know they are difficult to work with, and I'm still optimistic that I can have a good conversation with them, but I'm realistic to know where they are, and therefore I know how to maneuver the conversation and still come up with a good one, because I won't be head-buttoned with behaviors that I used before.
Optimism is how one carries oneself. I'm optimistic. I have an energy about, you want to cultivate an energy, let's say, about myself, where I'm optimistic and enthusiastic, but my optimism isn't going to have any expectation for that other person to change.
Yes, realism.
I
within realism.
Realistically accept them where they are, whoever they are, but I'm optimistic about
who I am.
Who I am.
In the presence of the realism of what's there.
When you first started talking about self-talk, self-communication, and this whole issue, my mind went immediately to specific episodes, specific
right.
events.
Yeah.
I'm going bungee jumping. No, you're not. The inner talk. Or I'm going out to dinner with friends that I've been out with before. I don't like them, but I'm going to be optimistic tonight. It's going to be better. Specific events, specific episodes in our lives. Now, what is your advice to someone who deals with this on a much more global level? Relationships at work, maybe it's someone important in government or business where their decisions affect the lives of many. Is it the same process?
Oh yeah.
How do you get over it? And because it's magnified,
right,
you know, a million times. And these are great thinkers,
right,
these people that
politicians,
world leaders, owners of business, etc.
Some of them are thinkers, and some of them I'm sure have a great deal of self talk going on, but microcosm, macrocosm, it's the same process. You know, you still need to, as you said, think instead of just self-talk. Have you ever gone out and done something, then criticized yourself for it later?
Oh.
You know, stayed out too late, had one more beer, you know, then it's 8 o'clock in the morning, the alarm's going off, and you're going to be late. And of course, then the self-talk goes. Blah, 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 blah. You know, and you're a bad person, and you did this, and you did that. Blah, 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 blah. Well, the self-talk is just trying to create an environment where you'll change your behavior. If you get in touch with it, and you say, okay, what is the purpose of me having self-criticism like this? What's the purpose? And then you start talking to your self-talk, and it starts dissolving itself. It doesn't have to go through your head over and over how you're schmuck for being late. How you're schmuck for, you know, staying, you know, having a, you know, the bottom line is you stayed because you wanted to have a good time. You want to get up in the morning and you want to go to work on time because you want to be a good person and you want to do your job well. Neither one of those are bad. The self-talk, however, can't tell you what's on the back of its mind if you don't engage it and say, what's going on? Why do I say this to myself? What's the purpose behind my self-talk? Think. Just like you said, bring the self-talk into a thinking arena with an objective view on it. It's not your enemy and it's not your asset. You know, other people think they have an asset. Well, I love myself. I have wonderful self-esteem. And they hold themselves so high that they eliminate themselves from relationships.
Is it healthy to share these thoughts with a spouse, a friend, a counselor, as opposed to just sharing them and, you know, rocking back and forth on the subway and talking to yourself, which we've all seen.
I think it's much more interesting to see you rocking yourself on. I've done that before. You know, is it for everybody? I would say it's for your spouse, for your friends, somebody that's interested, somebody that would support you in discovering you. Mm-hmm. You know, because we are totally discoverable. You know, we think we know us, but we don't know us, but we are discoverable. And much more interesting rather than just listening to the self-criticism or the unrealistic, what did you call it? Unrealistic
expectation.
Unrealistic positive.
Yeah.
When someone believes they have unrealistically positive attributes, like for a man or a woman says, oh, I'm so good looking. Yeah. And you look at him and you're like, well, okay, whatever you say, you really aren't. I've heard this from people.
Delusions of grandeur.
I've
heard this from both men and women where they say, they literally say, I'm so beautiful. And I'm sitting there saying, you know, listen, I'm not saying you're, you know, the Hunchback of Notre Dame, but really your positive self-talk here isn't really servicing you.
Because they limit who they will let in their life from their self-talk. When your self-talk starts to become self-mutilating or debilitating.
Or self-aggrandizing.
Mm-hmm. Then you need, before it even gets there, you need to talk to your self-talk, which then becomes communication, or as you said, thinking.
This positive self-talk is almost more detrimental than the negative self-talk.
Because it
limits.
Because
the positive self, often people are so addicted to their positive self-talk, even if it's hyper-unrealistic, that it's just flat-out narcissism. And oftentimes people with those types of personality issues do not seek help.
I've heard the term dogmatic, someone who says something and then believes exactly what they're saying, regardless of what the truth is or what the barometer is.
Exactly, exactly. So I agree with you, think.
It takes us right into our building block. You're listening to Girlfriend on VDGX.com, also on the podcast. And we do thank everyone for downloading us on iTunes for free or at twodragons.com. And Cynthia Chavan's website, cynthiachavan.com, C-H-A-U-V-I-N. We are with Cynthia, her husband, John Miles. My name is Jeff Newman. Time for us to take a short break. We'll be right back with more of Girlfriend. Welcome back to Girlfriend, Relationship Radio Rebooted. I'm Jeff Newman, and we're with Cynthia Chavan. And the building block this week for better relationships, which segues perfectly from what we were just speaking of, don't over-identify. Talk about that, Cynthia, because I know plenty of people who do.
Well, it comes into when you have a relationship or when you meet someone, you have an opportunity to stay in yourself and find the other person, recognize the other person. When you're over-identified with them, you start to see their behavior as your value system. This is what I'm worth. You know, they're not treating me fairly. They're not doing that. Instead of seeing their behavior as their behavior, it's an over-identification to see someone else's behavior as the reflection of who you are or your value. They behave that way if you go away. That is them. But we take it so personally.
On some level, before you get deeper into it, because I know you will, if you're in a relationship, you and your personality does influence that of your partner.
It can, but it doesn't have to.
It usually does.
That's when you're over-identified with their happiness or their sadness or their emotion in a non-productive manner.
Well, if it's productive, let's say. It's manageable. But I have absolutely changed to accommodate things that I know are better for my relationship or better for my wife or better for my family.
What do you mean by that?
I mean that I'll alter the way that I deal with things or think of things. I can't be specific right off the top of my head. I just know that the thought process, their existence has influenced who I am and
Correct.
How I've changed.
But that doesn't have anything to do with over-identification. What I'm talking about is that, okay, John's in a bad mood, whatever it is, over whatever, all right?
That's not hard to believe.
I come home and he's sharp or, you know, says something in a aggressive manner. I can choose
hey,
to
wait
say.
Wait a second here.
I'm making it up, honey.
This has never happened. A disclaimer, this has never happened.
So, we could turn it the other way because I've done it too. So
tell me about that.
Yeah. So he comes in and he says something sharp. I can look at it and say, oh, must have had a bad day. Or I can look at it and go, oh, I don't deserve to be treated this way. I already know I don't deserve to be treated this way. This is not about me. He's got something going on. Give him a little space. Give him some time to download. And come on back around. If I over-identify with his behavior, then I need to correct this behavior. And then I go, well, you shouldn't talk to me like that, you know. And then, of course, it multiplies because whatever has been there that he didn't process out now is amplified by my expectation that he needs to be perfect all the time.
So don't over-identify.
Don't over-identify with the other person's behavior as your value, your worth, or who you are in any way, shape, or form.
What if you just want to be supportive and help?
In which case, then you ask the person what the heck they need. You don't assume what they need. How can I be of service? How can I help you? Is there any help I can do? Well, I need quiet. Okay.
Is that healthy in a professional relationship as well? On the
not to over-identify? Yeah. Absolutely.
Because I think, because only because it's a bigger forum.
Right.
You're dealing with more people on a professional level, usually.
Can you imagine what it would be like for a school teacher to over-identify with her students? He or she would be deriving their value from what 17-year-olds thought about them. Mm-hmm. It's irrelevant. You take that example and play it into the rest of your life.
There are actually, I'm sure there's teachers that out there that have over-identified with their students and
I'm sure
believe they were this or that or the other, either sure. wonderful because the students thought they were wonderful, or they weren't good at what they were doing because the students weren't getting what they were teaching.
Just give me an example, please, about how women are impacted by this.
If he's in a bad mood, then it's all about them. If he calls, it's all about them. If he doesn't call, it's all about them. If he likes blue, they start wearing blue, even if they didn't even have anything blue in their closet. Okay, so they start over identifying with the other individual and contorting their behavior into a pleaser, and then eventually turn around and get very angry because they have contorted themselves and then expect the other individual to do the same.
Let's take that same woman, and I don't mean to interrupt, but the woman whose priority right now is to be in a meaningful relationship. So her priority is to please. Her priority is to throw away some of the baggage and some of the more independent thinking that she had done in the previous 5 to 10 years of dating.
Uh-huh.
I want to commit myself to a relationship. Where can or how does she know where to draw the line between trying to please and trying to be that perfect partner and being their own person and not doing something unhealthy like over-identify?
Because when you're pleasing for an outcome, that's the key. Depends upon what the motivation is. There's nothing wrong with giving. There's nothing wrong with pleasing. There is if it's contorted to get an outcome. If you're in a relationship or developing a relationship with someone and you know who you are, you know your reality, and you want to give, but don't stick it with an expectation of receiving back or an outcome that by doing this, he will love me, he will choose me. Do it as a giving. The other is relationship commerce. It's buying someone's affection.
At some point in someone's relationship, that's the focus. It is. It's what some relationships are based on. When trying and attempting to do the right thing.
Commerce?
No. Over-identifying so that I have this perfect household.
Right.
I've seen it happen. That is the motivation, is I need to make this work. It's been me in the past. The little voice in my head told me that. You know, that kind
right.
of thing.
Right.
So where you draw the line to make that happen. And male or female.
When you're talking about giving, you don't have to stop giving. You have to stop being attached to the outcome of the perfection or the payback. You give because you have the emotions, the desire, the want to give. The giving is actually a self-propagating thing. The giving is the gift. So it doesn't come back with a price tag. Otherwise, it's not given.
Would you
when do you stop that? You never stop.
Right. Here's an emotional little tidbit, and I don't know if it's true or not. Someone received flowers once. A woman received flowers once from a guy and got upset because she felt he gave her the flowers not for her to feel good, but for the feeling that he would have knowing that he did the right thing and gave her flowers for a birthday or whatever it was.
There you go.
Do you agree? Is that over-identifying? Is that
on the woman?
On the male side. The guy who said, I'm going to give her flowers and can't wait to see her reaction.
Right.
That was his motivation, not to make her feel better or happy or
that was his celebrate. Motivation.
That was his motivation. For him to feel good about doing something nice for her.
Don't we all feel good when we do something nice for somebody?
But he didn't do it for her.
Yeah, why would you want to give if it didn't feel good? It made whomever, I'm going to say you, made you feel good. Why is that wrong? There's nothing wrong with you feeling good about giving the gift. And if the other individual says, gee whiz, you only gave it because it made you feel good, I'd have to ask the other individual, you know, what about receiving?
Right.
Aren't you capable of receiving and joy?
No, because the gift could have been the reverse, the joy of acceptance.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You know, it's
a twofold situation.
Yeah. I know Cynthia loves to do this kind of stuff. She buys socks for wayward people all the time.
I'm saying that too.
Socks. She goes to Costco and that's how she gives.
I close a lot. Yeah, I do buy a lot of clothes for a lot of people and I like to pack it up and send it to them.
But it's not because the little voice in your head told you to do that.
No, it just feels good. It feels good. I'm hopeful that they're appreciative, but if not, that's okay. You know, it's finished. It's done. It's done with the act of giving. The given is the present that I receive.
And she's detached from whether they have an outcome about it.
Or not.
Or call me or right. Say thank you. It doesn't really matter.
Exactly. You've been listening to The Girlfriend on BDGX.com. I'm Jeff Newman. Cynthia Chavan is our relationship expert. You can go to her website, CynthiaChavan.com, CHAUVIN. Download the podcast. You can get it for free on iTunes. Thank you, John Miles. Thank you, Cynthia.
You're welcome.
And we'll talk to you next time.